Of Artificer Creation.
Welcome to episode 145 of the Let's Talk Photography podcast. I'm your host, Bart Buschatz, and this is the show for October 2025. This solo show is a little bit unusual because it has visual aids. So actually, I really do suggest you go to let's-talk.ie and check out the show notes for this episode, where you will find an embedded PDF, if I can figure out how to make WordPress do that, and or a link to download one. So that's because this podcast episode has its origins in a presentation I recently gave to the wonderful Naples Mac Friends Mac Users Group about photographing with the iPhone. And most of that talk is not really the kind of thing I would generally do on this show because it's very Apple specific, as you might imagine at a Mac Users Group. But this part of the presentation isn't. This is the part of the presentation where I explained some of the basics of just getting better photography by doing the simple things. Doing the basic things needed to make a good photograph. And that advice applies, just period. Whether you're using the most coolest DSLR or whether you're using any smartphone, you are going to get the most out of any camera by doing the basics right. And so that's what I'm going to share here. And what I've done is I've taken the subset of the slides from my presentation that cover this topic, popped them into a separate little PDF, and uploaded them to the web and linked them in the show notes. What I did in my presentation was I broke the presentation into two halves that follow this podcast's ethos, which is the art and craft of photography. And so I started with the craft, where I focused on the specifics of getting the most out of the iPhone as a camera and getting the most out of the built-in Photos app as a photo editor. And then I moved on to the art of photography, which is basically how to get the most out of, I pitched it at the iPhone, but again, this part, the art, it doesn't matter which particular type of camera you have, the art is the art. And so that's what I'd like to talk about now. We're going to start with a section that is a little bit more phone camera specific. I don't think the iPhone, I do think the iPhone is among the very best of the phone cameras. But there are competing cameras from other vendors that are in the same ballpark, and you can have a reasoned argument whether the iPhone is better or not. I personally think it is, but that may just be because it aligns a little bit more with my feelings about things, a little bit more naturalistic. It's just different design choices. But in terms of the quality of the hardware, you know, they're on the same ballpark, right? That's at the end of the day, which means that while I did write these slides thinking of an iPhone, I really don't think they're that iPhone specific, even this very, very first section. So let's dive into my first piece of artistic advice that I gave to that Mac user group, which was to embrace the strengths of phone cameras. So the biggest strength that every phone camera has, no matter who made it, is that it is the camera that is always with you. Right, it will reward you for keeping your eyes open. With practice, and again, it doesn't matter who made your camera phone, you need to get good at taking it out of your pocket and getting it into camera mode without having to think about it at all, without having to futz about. You need to be able to go from, oh, that's cool, to I am now taking a photograph within a second or two. And your particular phone will have probably many different options to choose from to quick launch the camera in some way. Maybe a dedicated hardware button, maybe something you can configure to have right on the lock screen. Every phone will be different. But the point is, whatever your phone can do, practice, 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 so that you can start shooting straight away. So if you always have your eyes open and you see something, you can be capturing it straight away. They are, of course, all of our phones, even the giant big fablety ones, are relative to big chunky cameras, small and light, which means you can get very unusual points of view. Many, many phone cameras allow you to use the volume buttons as shutters, or they have a dedicated hardware shutter button, which means that you can almost certainly hold the phone in such a way that the lenses, which are going to be near one of the edges of your phone, are right on the ground, and then you can probably very easily reach that hardware button, which lets you get these amazingly cool worm's eye views of the world, and simple things just look way cooler from a point of view that is not human head height, because that's how we see the world. Our eyes are at eye height, and that's the normal view. Any view that's not at human eye height is different, eye-catching. It will make a more arresting photo. It will make a photo that catches people's attention. They may not know why it captures their attention, but it's because it's not from the point of view they spend their entire lives at. And so, really low to the ground, cool. But of course, the opposite of that, if you have a hardware button of any kind, is you can also hold it up over your head and get really cool points of view from up on high. So really, you don't have to shoot anywhere near human eye height. You can have fun, and it will reward you greatly. These modern phones, you know, whether it's an iPhone or whether it's another phone, they have powerful built-in digital signal processing, which allows them to have massive dynamic range. And that is something they're all competing with each other on. Therefore, they're all good at this, because that's how they're comparing each other to each other. This means that you can have shadows and they'll still have detail. It also means you can probably shoot straight into the sun and still get detail if you want it. A lot of these camera phones also have powerful panorama modes. This iOS exceeds here. You know, Apple's line of camera phones has an absolutely amazing panorama mode, but others either have it built in or they have dedicated apps. And so again, if you can't get wide enough with one of your available built-in lenses, well, the chances are that you can simulate it with a panorama. Again, the iPhone has an amazing macro mode, but that's not something that's unique to the iPhone. Other vendors do that too, which means you can get right up close with that small, light little phone and get really cool shots by getting just really close to things. Ordinary things can look really cool up close, and you can find cool things just about anywhere. And another place where these cameras, or phone cameras, are really competing with each other is with having very clever night modes. So you hold the phone, and what it's really doing under the hood is taking a giant big video, pulling all of those frames into the phone app, stacking them, you know, aligning, auto-aligning them, stacking them, processing them, and giving you a well-exposed image, perhaps over 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds, which is more than enough to start to bring out starscapes and all sorts of really cool stuff, let alone just streetscapes at night. So again, the iPhone is particularly good at this, but it's not the only camera phone that has this party trick, and it's extremely powerful. Because of the nature of how these things work, the stiller you can hold the camera, the better, right? Regardless of whether you have an iPhone or something else. So I really like to turn myself into a human tripod. You have two elbows, you can spread them out wide to give you a nice sturdy triangle, and then you hold the phone between your two hands. So you find a fence or a low wall or something that you can spread your elbows on, and then that tripod shape you make with your own arms can be very, very stable compared to what you could hand hold. And of course, you can buy little tripod adapters for all of your cameras, you can buy little, or all of your phones, you can buy little teeny tiny foldable tripods. I mean, these things literally just have to hold the phone steady. So I have a tiny little tripod that holds the phone about like an inch off the ground, but it doesn't matter because it's perfectly steady. So I will get a perfect 30 second exposure, and that will really bring out the night sky. So that night mode is at your disposal, and it's amazing. So in the next thing you'll find in the slide deck, if you're following along, is examples of this. So it's the phone it's the camera you always have with you, which means when the universe surprises you with something cool, snap, snap. So a smattering of just recent examples of me getting cool photographs that way is one which is a little smiley face in frost. So we have these little wooden benches in the green areas in our housing estate. And on a very frosty morning last winter, one of the local kids drew a smiley face in the bench. It was the cutest thing ever. I had my phone snap. Another day, quite a bit later, at the end of the summer this year, I was walking through the beautiful grounds of St. Patrick's College in Maynooth. And many moons ago, when I was an undergrad in Maynooth, they would keep the lawns in front of the old buildings manicured. And they stopped doing that during COVID and turned them into wildflower meadows for the summer. And then at the end of the summer, they turned them into hay. And during the summer, that's actually kind of cool to have those wildflower meadows. And, well, obviously, that means that once a year, what is normally parkland becomes agricultural land with these amazing buildings as a backdrop. And you have to be very lucky to be there exactly when it happens. And I was. And I got the picture of these giant big bales of hay on the big lawns in front of these amazing historic buildings. It's just a cool shot, right? It'd be very lucky. Next example I have is a jet airliner, a Ryanair jet, very, very close to the moon. Like, the jet is very low because I was near the airport and I noticed the moon was there, and I was like, if I just stand here for a minute or two, I think I'm going to get lucky. And there is less than a wingspan between the edge of that airplane and that moon. I was very lucky. But again, there, noticed, snap. And then the last one is just a tiny little segment of rainbow over the playground in our housing development. I was literally walking home from work when, very briefly, for just the tiniest amount of time, this little segment of rainbow appeared over the playground. Snap, right? It's the camera you always have with you. Down to the light thing, get right down is what I've titled the next slide, with examples including a seashell sitting in the sand right down low. So you really, it feels like the beach goes on forever. A beautiful yellow maple leaf on a very mundane urban pavement on my street, right at my front door, in fact. But by literally having the camera resting on the pavement right in front of the leaf, you get this feeling of a very boring street, but this cool yellow leaf, it's a very arresting picture. Frosty grass in front of a beautiful old boathouse in Carton House, as it happens. But again, by getting the camera right down on the ground into that frosty grass, it's a lot more captivating a shot than if I just snapped it at human eye height. At human eye height, there would have been a nice view of a nice place on a nice frosty morning. But by getting down low, it's it catches your eye. Similarly, again, Carton House, this time not the boathouse, but the house. And it's not a small house. They have lawns at the front of the house. And so that the people in the house wouldn't have to see the servants. The lawns end with a drop, and then there's a pathway lower than the lawns. It's called a ha-ha, and it's designed to keep the riffraff out of view of the hoi polloi. But that means that as you're going on a walk, the lawn is at your eye height, which means that actually it's really easy to get the camera down low on that lawn. And when there's wildflowers like little daisies growing right where that lawn meets the ha-ha, well, you just take a snap and you get these lovely tiny little daisies in the grass looking giant because they're right in the foreground, and then looming behind them is this absolute monstrosity makes it sound bad, this massive pile, right, this giant big mansion, it's many stories and many wings. It looks extra cool because again, you're right down low at those daisies would be lost at normal human eye height, but get down low and there you have them. And then, of course, I was always told when I used to shoot with a film camera that the secret was to have the sun at your back. Have good light, F8, and be there. Well, nowadays, with modern smartphones, deep into dusk, not a problem. You will get amazing photographs because of those night modes and because of that amazing ability to deal with mixed light. So just two samples in this slide. Again, less-talk.ie, you can download the deck. And you'll see one of them it's taken deep into dusk. The sun has set, but not long ago. It's just about gone. And they have these sort of subtle mildly so many pink oranges in the sky. The sky overhead is still just about blue. There's a train running next to a perfectly still canal because there wasn't a puff of wind that day, and it's reflected in it along with that amazing sky. And so you have all of these shadows and all of these things. And you wouldn't have a chance, right? There's headlights on the front of the train. You wouldn't have a chance with the DSLR where they... Well, the train's moving, so you're not going to get a traditional HDR, but these modern phone cameras, not a bother to them. It's all perfectly exposed and it looks cool. One day I was walking through the grounds again of St. Patrick's College Maynooth. It is definitely one of my favourite muses. And there was a wedding on, and it was, I think it was autumn. Actually, it was definitely autumn time. It was last autumn because the buildings were covered in rich red Boston ivy. But the wedding party had placed these beautiful candles all around the campus. So as the dusk was setting in, you were just coming to these scenes I've walked through a million times, only there were these lovely little orange candles just set about the place. Crouched down low, right up to the candle, very mixed light, not a problem to a modern phone camera. You get these really cool shots of the candle-lit, dusky campus. Beautiful. And again, shoot straight into the sun, right? Three examples here. So one is, again, get down low. It's frosty grass with the sun straight behind the frosty grass, backlighting the frosty grass that the camera's right up against. And one of the reasons I was really, really wanted to get the shot was because two contrails from jets had made a giant big X in the sky next to the sun, which is very unusual that they would cross. Normally they're all running parallel to each other, but these two just cross in this giant big X next to the sun, all backlighting this frosty grass. It's a cool shot. Another one is of a beautiful, it's a ruined church with a, so the church is not that old, it's a few hundred years old, and the tower next to it is a traditional Irish round tower, which date back to the early monastic period, which is basically 1,000 years ago. And then there's some old headstones that date back to the time of the church about 200 years ago at very rakish angles. Anyway, this is a lovely historic scene. There's a nice blue, mostly blue sky with some fluffy clouds, and the sun is setting. Straight into the camera, just at the bottom corner of the tower, casting these big wide shadows on those higgledy-piggledy gravestones. Not a problem. The grass is still properly exposed. The sunburst is a sunburst. The sky is still fine. Even on the shaded side of the buildings, there is still detail there because these modern phone cameras are amazing at pulling detail out of shadows because they have these high dynamic ranges. It's one of my favourite shots, actually. Again, it's shot low. You can see a theme here. I love shooting low. I have another one of a backlit daffodil. Literally, the sunlight shining through a daffodil. The sun is in the shot. The daffodil is in the shot. It's like an X-ray of a daffodil. It's cool. Again, massive dynamic ranges. Not a problem for these modern phone cameras. Mighty macro modes is the next slide, right? Get close. The first one is of a damselfly I almost trod on, actually. The damselfly was sitting on a manhole cover, and it's tiny, right? It's an inch across, it's an inch long at most, but it was kind enough to let me get close. And you can count the hairs on its eyeballs. Who knew eyeballs had hair? They do if you're a damselfly. The thing is a strange oil slick green sort of a colour, fluorescent, very cool. Not fluorescent, that's the wrong word. Effervescent? Yeah, I can never think of the word for that thing an oil spill does. It's cool, right? And it just right up close, amazing detail with the phone I had in my pocket when I almost trod on the damselfly. Having gotten properly rained on one day while grabbing a walk, the sun burst forth. And these beautiful daisies were growing in some waste ground next to a footpath. Beautiful little, you know, not little, they're about an inch across, with this really cool yellow centre, white petals, and covered in water droplets, which make for an amazing macro. One day coming home for lunch, I almost got the face scraped off me by an errant rose branch. So sometimes rose bushes can sprout these branches that grow spectacularly quickly and just sprout out across footpaths and things, and I very nearly got like my eye torn out by one of these rose branches. But as I ducked and just about managed not to get it in the face, I noticed a tiny little ladybug sitting there. Again, phone in pocket, so quick snap. And the ladybug didn't seem in any way to have realised it almost blinded me, but it sat still for me, which was very kind of it, while I got right up close and got this amazing photograph that you'll see on the slides. And of course, you have night mode. there are times when the iPhone has better eyes than I do. And it's not just because I'm 45. It's because the iPhone, with its night mode, can do amazing things. So I knew, based on my Aurora Alerts app, that there was a high chance of Aurora this night, and the sky was sort of kind of clear. There was some low cloud, but it wasn't fully clouded. So I went to the end of our housing estate, where there is a big fence, where I could put my elbows into my human tripod shape, and I put the camera, my iPhone, into its widest of its cameras, and I fired. 10 seconds later, I could see these giant streaks of purples, reds, and greens. Because what to my eye looked like mist or something, right? I could see stars, and I could see there was something between me and the stars, but it didn't have a defined colour to the naked eye. It was sort of, am I imagining it? Is there something there? Well, with the iPhone, as you can see in the slides, no doubt about it, that is Aurora Light. I like to make my own Christmas cards. Last year, in December, one of our local supermarkets had the cutest little homemade figurines of reindeer made out of logs of wood. It's kind of hard to describe, but very, very cute. So as soon as I set up the Christmas tree, I popped my little Rudolph friend in front of the Christmas tree, turned off all the lights so that the only illumination was from, well, the Christmas tree was providing the backlight, and I actually had, I got my darling beloved to help me. So my darling beloved was standing next to me with the torch from a phone camera, illuminating the front of our little Rudolph friend with the Christmas tree behind, and I was there with my phone, snapping a picture of my little Rudolph friend with the Christmas tree behind as a soft focus bokeh. It was a beautiful Christmas card, perfectly homemade. Again, very cute little Rudolph guy. You'll have to look at the show notes to see what I'm talking about here. He's hard to describe, but he's very cute. Another evening, much later in winter, I was walking home from work, same playground that we had the rainbow over earlier, only now it was the depths of winter, so when I come home from work a little after five, it's dark, dark. And as I was walking by the playground, I noticed the full moon rising perfectly between two, sort of a Y-shaped doodad in the middle of the playground. Snap! Because of that night mode, came out perfect. We also have a very unusual modern sculpture. It's a giant big stainless steel thing with angled shapes. It's called Freedom, if memory serves. It's supposed to look like shoots of grass sprouting out of the ground. One heck of a piece of grass. Anyway, this thing is slightly illuminated by the streetlights on campus. Well, the base of it is certainly illuminated, but the top of it is bloody tall. The thing's the size of three stories, so it sticks right up into the sky where there happened to be a full moon. It's dark, not a problem for the iPhone. Very mixed light, not a problem for the iPhone. We have a full moon frame between the two ears of the Freedom Monument. It's rather difficult to describe. Look in the show notes. Cool. So the next thing I did in my presentation was I gave another section, a subsection on the art of photography, which was universal advice. And this really, really, really meets the definition of this podcast, right? Universal advice. So my first piece of universal advice is shoot freely, cull mercilessly. The secret to sharing 10 great photographs is shooting 1,000 and never sharing 99% of them. Oh, wow, that's an amazing photo. Yeah, it's not bad. You have no idea how many I didn't show you. Because these modern cameras of ours don't need to have any consumables put into them of any kind, why not experiment? Lots of different angles, lots of different points of view, lots of different zooms. Try the same subject from all the different ways you can possibly conceive of. And then the hard part. Throw away what doesn't work. So yeah, shoot freely. Now we have way too many photographs. Throw away all but the best. And that's hard, because we all sort of think about our photographs as being like our children. How do you choose? I do it in three passes. On the first pass, I delete everything that's just obviously wrong. Oh, that's not in focus. Oops, messed up the framing on that. Oops, cropped off the top of that. Right, all of the stuff that's just bad. Right, just measurably bad. Chuck them away. First pass, easy peasy. Second pass, I'll generally have taken two or three versions of everything that are very, very similar to each other. So, okay, here's three that are similar. Pick, pick, pick. That's the best of those three. Throw away the other two. Next three, throw away two. Next three, throw away two. Now left with the best of each of my different points of view, zooms, etc. I still more than one I really need. But I sleep on it at night, wait for a while. Definitely don't do it all at once. And then I go through again, and I throw away whatever isn't actually good. And then we have the keepers. So, delete the obvious flaws, reduce the similar shots, and then throw away the stuff that isn't actually that good. Obviously, of all of the universal advice, just consider your composition. Just take the time to consider your composition. Don't just snap a thing that's cool. Try to get a nice composition to capture the thing that's cool. This slide is probably not really aimed at the audience of this podcast because you're interested enough in photography to subscribe to a photography podcast. Nonetheless, no harm in a little quick reminder of some universal composition advice, right? Anything that has a face or that moves, if you want it to feel natural, give it some room to look or move into. If you have a car or a train moving right to left across your frame, don't frame it exactly in the middle. Give it a little bit more room on the left because it's moving right to left. If you have a person who's looking slightly off to one side, give that side of them a little bit more room than the back of their head has. Don't center it. It won't feel right. It'll feel off. Especially when you're shooting images of places, try to get a sense of depth, right? The real world is three-dimensional. It was three-dimensional when you stood there. You were absorbing it as a three-dimensional thing, but the photograph is a two-dimensional thing. How do you capture the essence of a place when you've lost the whole dimension? The answer is you think about your composition very carefully. The three-layer strategy I find extremely helpful to get a sense of depth. Find an interesting foreground. So you're in a landscape. The very first thing is find an interesting foreground, right? You can move tens or even hundreds of meters without changing the background in a landscape in any appreciable way. So you really do have a lot of leeway to find an interesting foreground. A rock, a tree, a flower, a shrub, anything. Something of interest to add a front layer. Then you have the main landscape, the thing you're actually like, ooh, that's cool. And then try to get something behind it, right? Sometimes you just got to go back to a place a few times. Get a nice sky. Just try get a third layer, whatever way you can. If that means actually composing it so that there's a lot more sky in the shot than you might usually do, that may actually work really well. Right? Just try to get three layers. Another thing is use leading lines. Leading lines will give you a sense of depth because the universe does that. So a meandering path, meandering off into the distance, will make it feel like you'd fall into the photograph. Right, converging parallel lines. Well, there we go, straight off the bat. Vanishing points of any kind, in fact. Sense of depth, boom. Right. Another thing you can try doing, and this also gives a sense of depth, but it also just makes the whole image feel nicer, is find some sort of natural frame. Right, that's one of your layers, bing, bing, bing. Right, so sometimes just a corner is all you need to frame something rather than a full edge. But if you are going to go with full edges, try doing them in pairs, right? So top and left, bottom and right, top and right, bottom and left, that kind of thing, right? One of your corners is another lovely way to frame stuff. And symmetries are amazing if you want your composition to speak to people, right? Keep your eye out for any kind of symmetry, a reflection, a repetition, a rotation, anything symmetrical of any kind of symmetry. I've dedicated entire episodes to this. You know, they will give you good shots. Now, again, the next piece of advice is for people listening to this show, probably old news, but hey, we're going back to basics, so let's give a little reminder, right? There are lots of things called rules in photography. They're not rules, right? Give stuff room to look into isn't a rule. It's a guideline for if you want your stuff to feel natural. If you want a composition that feels tension-y, right? That feels intention, that feels uncomfortable. If that's what you're trying to evoke, do the opposite. So I like to, whenever I hear the phrase rules and guidelines, I cannot help but think of Pirates of the Caribbean, Captain Barbossa. Well, these rules of composition are more what you'd call guidelines than actual rules. Never was quite sure what Captain Barbossa's accent was, so you'll have to guess what mine was. Anyway, the really key point, and this is double, triple true about the rule of thirds, which really, really, really isn't a rule. Great compositions are not mathematically perfect. They feel just right. So it's the feel, not the math. I find it helpful to have the 3x3 grid up when I'm shooting and when I'm cropping. I find it helpful. I have learned over time not to treat that grid as some sort of a requirement. I must get the subject on the grid. No. About approximately, if it works. It's a guideline at best. So about a third in from an edge is often a good place for a subject or feature in your composition. Do not be a slave to that 3x3 grid. It will not help you. My next piece of general advice, I think I probably do need to focus on for every single audience, because a lot of people, it feels wrong, right? Especially when you're shooting digital. It's good to crop. Yes, you are throwing away pixels, and if you wanted to print the thing out the size of a bloody billboard, well, you've lost a little bit of resolution. But our modern cameras, including those in our smartphones, have so many pixels that really it doesn't matter a darn for the size you're actually going to look or print the thing out. Cropping to an appealing composition is going to give you a heckin' lot more value than the hypothetical ability to print it out even bigger. Because you're not going to do that. You're probably just going to look at it on your phone. So by religiously not cropping, you're achieving worse photographs for no good reason I can conceive of. I would also say, don't be a slave to the fact that my iPhone shoots at 4x3, my DSLR shoots at 6x4. That's just what comes out of the camera. If the subject looks better at a different aspect ratio, go with a different aspect ratio. Let the subject determine the aspect ratio of your finished image, not the camera you happen to shoot it with. So it's not just okay to crop. It's vitally important, in my opinion. In fact, I will go so far as to say, intentionally shoot too wide. Don't try to frame it perfectly in camera, because if you miss, well, I guess you can use generative fill, but no, just try not to miss. And the way you don't miss is by shooting a little wide and cropping it later, right? You know you have all of those pixels. You know you're going to crop it to get everything just so. Shoot a little wide, crop to perfection. And you can use that crop to fine-tune, right? Maybe you're cropping away like 3, 4%. You don't have to crop massive chunks out. You can crop tiny little pieces, but tune the composition with the crop. Perfectly center round subjects in a square crop. Have linear features like branches or the edges of paths exit exactly in the corner. Center your symmetries of any kind perfectly. You know, you're not going to do that in camera unless you're lucky, frankly. Finesse it in post. So the slides then have an example of a nice shot of a train running along a canal with a towpath framed by some trees. The raw image is 4x3 because that's what the iPhone shoots. The train is long and thin. The canal is going off into the distance towards a vanishing point. It's naturally long and thin. The whole image has a natural shape that is wide. 16 to 9. Wide. Crop it wide. It will feel right. The train now feels like it's moving across the scene from left to right, and the path exits perfectly in the corner, right? Down to the pixel, get that crop to perfection. You know, a second example is of a winding road, a beautiful winding road. It has a great sense of depth because it undulates and winds, and then the sky above is these beautiful wisps of painterly cloud. It was such a gorgeous day. I was literally cycling along, slammed on the brakes, checked there was no traffic in front or behind, snap. Got very lucky, actually, because there were lots of cars before I got this picture and lots of cars after I got this picture, but I got the picture with no cars. Now, it's not a bad picture, 3x4 as it came out of the iPhone. Not a bad picture at all. But crop it to the square that I think the scene works best at. Perfectly centre that road. The road that is so eye-catching because it undulates into the distance exits exactly left and right in the corner. You now feel like you are on the road. You feel like you are the road moving off into the distance. Right? Crop to perfection. Much more powerful composition with the perfect crop. Another universal piece of advice is correct your perspective. Distorted perspectives can be distracting. Sloping horizons, off square buildings, they just make your eye go, that's not right. Now, I have a real pet peeve about sloping horizons that contain water. I have a physics education, and I can tell you for a fact the reason we have liquid inside spirit levels is because it doesn't rest at an angle. You cannot make a bucket of water sit at an angle. The water will be level. That's what it does. So if you have a seashore and the thing is at a 2 or a 3 degree angle, it will feel wrong. If you put the thing at a 45 degree angle, so you clearly meant it, it will feel like you're seasick or something, and that may well be what you're going for. Do not put it in the uncanny valley where it's just wrong. Right? It's not an artistic choice. It's just not level. Don't do that. Buildings distort with keystoning very, very easily. If you stand exactly face onto a building where you have the camera exactly parallel to the building, both up and down and side to side, exactly parallel, and you're shooting exactly horizontal, the building will be perfectly square. That's not how you generally get a photograph of a building, which means it will be keystoning. If you're not shooting too wide of a lens, the keystoning will probably be unnoticeable unless you bring up guidelines, you know, the rule of thirds grid or whatever in your editor, and then you're going to notice, oh, it's a little bit off square. But if you take the grid off and you look at it and it doesn't feel wrong, you're fine. But if it does feel wrong, it needs to be corrected. Get the grid up, open up those perspective tools and use the left and right keystoning and the vertical key, the horizontal and vertical keystoning sliders and the level slider to get the bloody horizon level to start with. And, you know, get it as square as you can. If you're shooting wide, you may just have some distortion you can't get rid of, but get it as square as you can. At least get it to the point where it's not distracting. I generally find if I'm shooting pictures of buildings, it really helps to get it as close to right as you can in the field so that you have the least work to do in post. And the iPhone has an optional feature, and I'm sure other phones do too, where you can have a level indicator on screen when you're shooting. I find that very helpful, and even then I manage to get my horizons off quite a bit of the time. I also do my best to basically shoot too wide with lots of room to crop, but exactly face onto the building with my camera exactly parallel to the ground, knowing full well I'm going to crop it so the horizon isn't smack dab in the center, but I'm shooting it that way so that my perspective is correct, and I'll crop to perfection later. And the wider your angle, the more you're going to have to correct, so you need to leave even more space, because when you pull those keystone sliders, you actually need some room to crop into, because that's how keystoning works. And yeah, it's faffy in post, so minimize your need to faff. But do the faffing if needed, because it will make the difference between a shot that feels a bit like a snapshot. It's like, ooh, that's distorted, ooh, that's wrong too. Oh, it's a nice campus at night, right, as exampled in the slide. Sometimes no amount of correction is going to win, in which case just lean in. Just avoid the awkward middle ground, that uncanny valley where it just feels like you didn't mean it. Intentionally have it be distorted to give a sense of size, like say a big church spire or giant big sky overhead, and just lean in. To the point of it being utterly distorted because you're leaning too much, right? Just don't have it be in the uncanny valley. Uncanny valley bad. My next piece of universal advice is to be creative. Don't let a design... I mean, it's nice to shoot realistic photos sometimes. It's a style I do a lot. But it's okay not to. It's okay to take a photograph that is mathematically perfectly white balanced and take the warmth slider and nudge it to the blue to make the scene feel artificially cold, or to nudge up the warmth slider to emphasize the feeling of coziness, warmth. Maybe you want to actually intentionally black out the shadows. Yes, our camera phones are amazing at capturing shadow detail. Maybe you actually don't want it. Maybe you want to black that out, perhaps all the way down to a silhouette. Our camera, phone cameras are very good at capturing detail in the highlights, but maybe it's okay to intentionally blow them out to give a high-key look. You can also reduce contrast and saturation to emphasize a softness or a mistiness. And a basic black and white conversion, just take the saturation to zero, can be surprisingly effective. Now, if you really want to have fun with black and white, you got to go into channel mixers and stuff, but that's not basic advice. We did a whole podcast on that because it's not basic. But be creative. Right? Unnatural beauty is what I called it, the slide of examples. Right? Some of these are quite recent. It was a summer day and there was a butterfly perched very, very, very high in a butterfly bush and I couldn't get close enough to have a look, but the sun was shining through the butterfly's wings and so I was able to get a semi-silhouette of the butterfly perched atop the butterfly bush, where the only thing you can see is like a stained glass effect of the red and the white, and all the rest of his wings and of the butterfly bush have been let down to black by taking the black slider and shoving it right up. Right, it's a silhouette with colour coming through. Kind of cool. Another one was a car parked perfectly in front of a puddle. So I rotated it 180 degrees and flipped it so that you can read the Volvo badge on the front of the car perfectly, even though it's a reflection. And the puddle was very, very, very small. So it's this up that the pavement is now at the bottom of the image. The tarmac atom of the road is now at the top of the image. And the car is somehow appearing out of them. It messes with your head. What it is a monochrome conversion, tightly cropped, flipped and mirrored. It's head-wrecking in all the best ways, I find. Or I certainly would argue. Another shot I snapped again on the way home from work, on our street, just one corner away from our house, and there was some ornamental grass. Again, I nearly had it smack me in the face, but the sun was setting behind it, and I snapped it, and it was a nice photograph, but it was a warm summer day, it was a beautiful summer evening. And the photograph was mathematically correctly white balanced. It just did not capture the feel of that warm summer sun. So the warmth slider is shoved quite dramatically too far to the red. Too far, right? By the laws of physics, too far. By the laws of photography, where you're trying to capture the sense of a place, not the physics of a place. You're not doing a physics experiment, you're making a photograph. It's too warm. It's perfect, though. I really like it. I also have a silhouette of an old manor house on a hillside and a high-key shot of a monochrome conversion too of a church tower vanishing into the low cloud in the mist. Again, by blowing out the sky. That is my little piece of basic advice from that talk to the Mac user group. The pitch was different to what I would normally do for this podcast, but you know something? Back to basics. I think we can all sometimes do it going back to basics. I certainly found that actually really good to write these slides because it forced me to consider the basics again. And I found that even though I technically knew all this stuff, it's all come out of my head and the examples all come out of my photo library, it was still good to reflect on them a bit, to remind myself of them a bit, because some of these techniques and stuff I haven't used nearly as much as I should. I'm sometimes a little bit too slavishly bound to a quote-unquote correct white balance, and I will nudge those sliders to make it quote-unquote right instead of nudging those sliders to make it feel right. That's personally one of the things I should be braver with is the warmth slider. Well, I'm getting better at being brave with the exposure sliders and intentionally blowing things out and blacking things out, because for a long time in my photograph career I was obsessed with not having anything blown out or blacked out. Right? Don't lose the detail anywhere. No detail anywhere must be lost. I was like, well, mathematically that's interesting, but photographically it really may not be. And so I keep having to remind myself of these things. And so I'm hoping you found it helpful to have a little reminder of the basics, regardless of your level of experience. Again, the slides I've been describing are all at letstalk.ie. I want to take a moment to thank all of the supporters of this show. You will notice there were no ads until now. We're near the end. There will be no ads between now and the end either, because this show is 100% listener supported. Listeners like you, amazing folks. If you have ever supported this podcast in any way, you have my heartfelt thanks. It is such a wonderful liberation as a podcaster to get to focus entirely on the content, not to be spending your whole time chasing advertisers. That's not a good use of my time. I don't do this for a living. I have a full-time job. I do this for fun, and it isn't great fun to chase advertisers. It is great fun to talk about photography, and the supporters of this show enable me to do that. You can support the show with a monthly pledge on Patreon, which helps me pay my regular recurring bills. You can make a one-off donation on PayPal, which helps me with one-off expenses like new software, new hardware, creative assets for the show. You may have noticed that in your podcatcher you now have a very pretty new logo that is a lot clearer and a lot more distinct from the Let's Talk Apple one, so you can actually tell my shows apart now by their logo. And that is recently commissioned artwork from the wonderful people at the Icon Factory, who do some amazing Mac apps like Ivory, but they are also creatives whom you can employ to do creative work for you. They had said recently they were struggling to find work in this day of AI, where their talents were being replaced by AI glop. And I thought, well, actually, I really want some new assets, and I would like to support actual artists. And I can tell you that it was a genuine pleasure to work with. I had a creative contact, hi Anthony. And we had a lot of back and forth, and he really got a sense of what I wanted. He gave me lots of choices along the way. It was a collaboration. It was a very pleasing experience, and I'm delighted with the outcome. And so an amount of the PayPal money that has come in from this to this podcast over the last couple of years went towards paying for that artwork. I'm really happy with it. I hope you are too. Anyway, letstalk.ie. I've been your host, Bart Bouchard. So you can find me at bartb.ie. Until next time, happy snapping.